You're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast with your host and nutritional therapist, Danielle Hamilton. I'm Danny, and I'm here to answer your questions and give you the tools to find freedom from sugar and carb cravings with real food and lifestyle tips so you can heal your body, balance your blood sugar, and feel amazing. Remember, the content discussed in this podcast is intended as general information only. It's not intended as one-on-one medical advice, so please consult with your healthcare practitioner before making any changes in diet and lifestyle. Let's get started with today's show. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I am so extra excited for today's episode because it is an interview with one of the most amazing people who I have had the chance of meeting and talking with. His name is Brian Sanders, and he is a filmmaker, and he is behind the feature-length documentary called Food Lies, and he's also the host of the Peak Human podcast. He graduated from UCLA with a degree in mechanical engineering and then turned to technology. He sold an app company, and he's used his technological background and love for fitness and nutrition to also work as a health coach and be the co-founder of the health, media, and technology company Sapien. Brian is super smart. He is so well-versed. He doesn't come from a health background, but has gone out of his way to just continue to learn about this stuff. And I love that he's not coming from this like medical health type of background, but is still talking the same language as I'm talking, because you don't need a degree in nutritional science to really understand this stuff. You see this real life application, and it helps you not be attached to dogma. And so I love that Brian and I talk about how there's not specifically one diet that either of us recommend. I'm not saying that every single person should be doing a keto diet exactly this way, or everyone needs to be carnivore. No, I don't believe that at all. I think that there is room for variability. I really believe in bioindividuality, but I also do believe that there are certain frameworks for that all diets need to have in common, certain elements that all diets need to have in order to help the users of these diets to achieve optimal health. So I love that Brian brings a lot of really great information to the table. He just went to Africa. He was studying different tribes there who are living, you know, off the land and who are struggling with these new modern advances that these governments are trying to bring in. But I don't want to take up too much time because this is a long episode, and I want you to listen to every bit of it because it is so good, so intriguing, so interesting. And I hope that you enjoy the talk with Brian Sanders as much as I do. And I linked to all his information in the show notes, so you could find him at Food Lies on Instagram. He has two different podcasts, Peak Human and Sapien, and he is going to release a new documentary called Food Lies. So if you want to contribute to this documentary and help Brian out, help with this cause, if this is something that you believe in, I'm also linking to his Indiegogo page where you can contribute a small amount, whatever you can afford, to help get this message out there. He says that he wants to get this documentary out on Netflix. There are a few really good documentaries on Netflix in terms of nutrition. There's a few that I love, like The Magic Pill. I like What's with Wheat? That's on Amazon Prime. But there's a lot of garbage documentaries out there, and we need this to sort of crowd out that space. We need to share this information to get it to the masses, to start to help people and have them learn to help heal themselves. And so this is my passion, and Brian shares that passion as well. And so I am so excited to welcome him to the show. I hope you all enjoy the interview as much as I did. Okay. So Brian, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you.
Thanks, Danielle. Good to be here.
Yeah. Thanks so much. So I am super excited to have this conversation that we're going to talk about today, about the topics that we're going to dive into, because I find that a lot of the things that I am super passionate about with nutrition and health, and like your Instagram handle and the title of your new movie, it's called Food Lies. Like, I feel that we have really been deceived and that there's a lot of things going on that are not within our best interest. And this is being promoted as mainstream stuff. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you sort of came to be where you are today?
Yeah, well, it was a long and interesting journey. I didn't ex ever expect to be in the health world or doing this. I wasn't even into social media, and now I'm a social media person. It's weird, but my story, well, I think it's because I was just a regular person. I'm like, I'm a regular guy. I went about my life, and then all of a sudden I turned 30 and things weren't so great, right? My parents had terrible problems, and I actually lost both of them around 30. So I mean, that's a wake-up call. Felt a little too young for that. And then I looked at my own health and I realized I couldn't eat what I wanted to anymore. You know, I was always active, but it catches up to you and it's always around 30. And I started thinking, wow, this is crazy. You know, like what, we get these chronic diseases now. My parents weren't super old. I mean, they were older than normal parents, maybe, but they were, you know, 70, 65. And losing them shouldn't be normal. And to jump ahead a little bit, I just got back from Africa and found everyone has great health. And what later in life, some of them are 120 years old. This lady, you know, we're hearing about these people that are 110. Yeah. And so we can get into that stuff later, but this is not how humans are meant to live. They're not supposed to just wither away in their 60s and end up in homes and have all the medications. And everyone just thinks it's normal to have problems in your 30s, where you're just like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm on this and this, and then I can't, you know, play sports anymore because, you know, my body's so broken down. I'm like, what do you mean? I play sports every single day. Like I do something every day, at least. So yeah, I just made a few changes. I learned something. So if you call it 30, 31, about 6 year journey making changes, and then I've been making this film for over 3 years actually. So that's when I dedicated full time to this, and I've learned a lot. I've interviewed over 150 people, just world famous scientists, doctors, regenerative agriculture people all over the world. I've yeah, just changed my life, changed my diet in very simple ways, and found just such amazing results. And yeah, I'm just trying to spread the word.
Yeah, that's great. And I, first of all, I'm so sorry that about your parents and losing them at such a young age. That's it's so hard. And it brings me back to my days when I actually found paleo. It was in 2012. I was working in a nursing home at the time as a speech therapist, and all around me, people were dying slowly, and they were just on all, they had so many diagnoses, they had so many medications, and I was like, this can't be how it is. And at that time, I got Rob Wolf's book, The Paleo Solution, and I started reading it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing information. I'm doing everything wrong. And here I see, you know, my patients' trays coming in, and it's just crap. It's processed, you know, standard American diet, and it's not doing anyone any favors. And I was just so like upset and irate and angry and all these mixed emotions about what was going on and what I was seeing. And then the changes that were happening in my health, kind of side by side, were just so like such a juxtaposition from what I was seeing. So what, you know, what is kind of like the first introduction that you had to changing your diet. So you said that you didn't really feel super sick, but what kind of changes did you start making?
That so that is part of the story, is that I wasn't sick. I was a normal person, but I was sick now looking back. And I look back, I was like, huh, I thought it was just normal to have like indigestion and like heartburn and like stuff like that, or you just have allergies, or you have joint pain, you have all these like little things. And I completely thought it was normal. And I have none of those anymore. I lost 4 pant sizes. So I was a normal person, right? I was a size 32 inch waist. A lot of people would be happy to be a 32 inch waist. I don't think I was looking great back then. I was kind of just like puffy. I felt like my everything was more circular, but I was just inflamed. Like I see the photos, my face was inflamed. So you have this chronic inflammation you don't even know about. And that's why I had the joint pain and the allergies and the indigestion, all this type of stuff, because you're just chronically screwing your body over with all the foods. And I made the simple changes. It was actually kind of my friends. You know, I have these two friends that got into it before me, and then I saw them make their transformations, and they started looking so great. And it was the same thing. It was this paleo thing, and they were getting into it around the same time as you. And I'm like, wow, okay. And I gradually started just changing. I'm like, okay, instead of eating a breakfast sandwich with the store-bought bread, I'll just make it just a plate of food.
Yeah.
And you know, like, why do I need the bread? Why don't I
Right.
just put a pile of eggs and bacon and sausage and it's great and avocado? And then it
Yeah.
was like, instead of all the pasta, I grew up in Hawaii, we're eating pasta and grain, rice and you know, all this stuff. We followed all the things. Just to go back, yeah, my parents were, we weren't going to fast food. We were just like following the diet, low fat diet, breads, pasta, doing all the right things, screwed us. So I was like, hey, instead of pasta, what if I just made some mushrooms and onions and then ate, you know, the main dish with the mushrooms and onions? Huge changes. So the smallest change in food, huge change in my life. And like I said, all those things got better. I dropped down to 28 inch waist. I feel very fit. I'm, you know, where when I play beach volleyball every weekend, I feel like I'm the most fit there. But you know, everyone there is always, it's actually funny because I'm in LA and they're always like trying to tell me about plant-based stuff. Like, you went to Africa? Like, oh, what'd you do there? I was like, oh, I was studying diet. They're like, oh, like about grains and plants. And I'm like, no,
No,
meat
a
and
little different.
milk and dairy. Yeah. It
Yeah.
was, it's just kind of funny though. But
Yeah.
yeah, that was my start, was just my friends. It's, I think it's always like you see someone,
yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
someone
Someone at
close to you, but
work.
not your family.
Yeah. No,
It's
no.
weird though, with your family, you don't want advice from them.
Right, exactly. I got a lot of pushback from my family for going paleo. I had an ex throw bread at me and tell me I was in a cult for going paleo. So these things are like really inbred, like pun intended, into us that we
Yeah.
should be eating this certain way, and like plant-based is healthy, and it's just so far from what we know to be our truth. So
Yeah.
you said that your parents were not eating anything sort of, you know, they weren't unhealthy by any means. They were kind of following the rules set for them. And that kind of reminds me of how my mom was always trying to get me to do like the low fat thing and like, you know, just watch my calories. But I ended up super sick with all these allergies in my 20s. And I was asking doctors, like, why am I this sick? And they're like, oh, well, we don't know. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, how do you not know? Isn't it your job to know? Like, I was always asking, why am I on five medications when I'm only in my 20s? Like, they don't have answers for you. So,
They still don't. I mean, I
yeah.
always make the joke about going to a skin doctor, and the only other problems I have is some, you know, I have like skin things, and it's like, hey, when I eat this, you know, my skin gets red, and they're just like, no, doesn't have to do with food. I'm like, what? Like, this is very clear. They're like, no, what are you talking about? And it's just so strange. And then I think that's when I started losing faith in the medical system. It's kind of
Yeah.
funny.
So, something I was going to ask you about later, but I wanted to jump ahead. So I'm 35. I graduated with this friend of mine. So she's 35. She's just finishing up GI doctor school. So she's going to be a full-on gastroenterologist. And I got a message from her on Instagram a few months ago. And she said to me, "Hi, would you have any books that you could recommend to me about nutrition and GI symptoms? Because I'm going to be graduating soon. And like, we're not really taught about nutrition, more just like how to cure very serious medical conditions, which honestly, most people don't have." So I was like, okay, I'm glad you're asking me this, but you're a GI doctor, you don't learn about nutrition, like literally
That is
food.
hilarious.
It's hilariously devastating, right? Like, it's like these are the people who, okay, our insurance covers the GI doctor, but not my services, right? Like, these are the first line that people are going to, and they're learning that, hey, you know, your disease has nothing to do with food. It's incurable, which they'll tell a lot of people, or it's in your head, or it's just anxiety. And we don't have, like, nobody has the answers for it in the mainstream. And so it's kind of like sending that message to us. What do you kind of feel about that?
It's the biggest problem. It's the
Yeah.
biggest problem we face because the healthcare practitioners are the front line, and people think of them as the doctors, as this is where I go for my health information. And these are the people that seem to know the least about health information in the health world.
I
And
agree. I
they all
agree.
agree, you know, all the doctors I talked to, like, oh yeah, I had like 2 weeks of training in 8 years. They had like, and it was just like how to eat cereal. You know, it's like a low fat, like how to eat a low fat diet. And yeah, I mean, it's sad. I mean, it'd be great if there was a whole new paradigm where Well, the problem is dietitians and nutritionists, most of them are in the wrong paradigm. But
Yeah.
if there was this new world where people got their health advice from people who actually knew what true health was, and they got their preventative, like band-aid, whatever they need to patch them up stuff from the doctors, which that's what they're trained to do. They're
Yeah, the
trained to,
symptom management kind of stuff.
which
Yeah,
is weird that
absolutely.
people think that the symptom management people are the health people. They're not the same person.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. So, in your film, in your documentary, it's called Food Lies, right? Yeah. So,
Yes.
yeah. So, I know the message is generally about like how destructive the food industry has become. And so, let's talk about, can you kind of bring us through like, okay, food nowadays in 2021, we think about food, and most people will have a picture in their head of something that's way different than we do, you and I, and even from food back in the day. So can you kind of take us through this transition and how we got to this state of like where the average person thinks that food is this these like ultra processed things?
Yeah, that is like one of the biggest food lies out there is just our modern food system is set up for health, and it that this is what food should be. And yeah, I mean, really the paleo movement and just all the other ones associated with it, like I don't put myself in a camp. It's just kind of this ancestral eating, I guess, would be my camp, because I'm like, I'm just saying we should go back to how we used to eat. I'm not
Totally.
saying we need some wacky new plan or like we're going to do this weird thing and this and that. Like, no. We're just talking about doing what humans always did. And it's just you guys, we're kind of pointing out, no, this modern food system is the weird, wacky thing. This is the new experiment. This is something we've never done. This is the food that no one's ever seen before. Humans have never seen this weird food. And we're trying to put that on a time scale. Even I like to think, you know, when you think about human history, and we're trying to figure out the best ways to visually do this. You know, I've seen some old films where they give a football field and you're like, this is how long we've been around.
Yes.
And the modern agriculture is 10,000 years ago. That's only the last like foot,
Yeah.
right? So we only got grains like in the last foot. And then we only got all the modern food in the last blade of grass. I mean, we're talking about like a millimeter is when we started getting these new foods. And if you can even explain that to someone, you're like, just think about it. We've had these modern foods that you think are all normal and everyone thinks is normal, and you got to eat this. And the person who threw bread at you thinks that this is the most normal thing and that you're an insane maniac for not eating it. This is for the 1 millimeter. We needed to look at the entire football field and what did we eat? And that's why I went to Africa, right? That's
Yeah.
part of, I mean, you can go all over the world and see all the different diets, and they all have the same consistent theme. Is that they ate from nature, they ate whole foods, they ate animal foods, and they ate as much of the animal foods as they could get. I mean, it wasn't always a lot. I'm not
Right.
saying we need to all be Chon Baker and eat steaks for every meal, but they all included animal foods. They all
Yeah.
ate whole foods, and they didn't eat the processed things like sugar, flour, and oil. It's so simple. I don't even get why this is a problem. I get it because it's a huge industry. There's billions and trillions of dollars in this food system and pharmaceutical system and dietitians, you know, fake healthcare stuff. Like, I guess I get it, but I don't get why I couldn't spend 10 minutes explaining this to someone and they should snap out of it.
I
Where
feel
if
the
I
same
could just do
way.
this little, well, I mean, maybe that's what the film's for.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 2 hours and it's going to lay it all out. And if anyone still believes in this modern food system after this 2 hours, then I can't help you. I mean, I've spent
Yeah.
3 years of my life trying to craft this amazing audio visual masterpiece of every single argument we could make and show all the angles, all the science, all the evolutionary story, and put it all together. But I mean, someone listening to this podcast could figure this out by now. If you just think about the really simple logic of what humans ate, how long we ate that, how it changed our whole system. Each animal has their own diet, their own foods they eat. And we know that we try to mess with it. They get sick and die. We try to get even the slightest things. You know, we can't keep zoo animals. I mean, now we've figured it out, but I remember growing up reading all these stories. Oh, we couldn't keep this, or they wouldn't mate, or they wouldn't do this because They're getting the wrong food. Even the store bought our modern bananas. We can't give modern bananas to primates in the zoo because they're too sugary. They get diabetes, they get sick and die. It's insane. We have to go get these, non-sweet, like ancient type of banana that what we used to eat as humans, even, right? We didn't eat these jacked up, like sugar foot-long bananas. Like it was not what we had. So, I don't know. I'm going in circles here. It's just
No,
crazy. It's
you're not going in
crazy.
circles at all. Like, that's great information. And like the whole banana thing, I did a post on that recently where I posted side by side these two bananas, like the ancient one that's filled with seeds and it's fibrous. And then we have this other banana that is, like you said, like a foot long and has 25 grams of sugar in it. And meanwhile, I was paleo and eating real fruits and saying, oh, this is natural sugar. And I had insulin resistance and PCOS after I went paleo. So there's a lot of people coming from this side. Well, it's fruit sugar. Well, fruit sugar is natural. And it's like, well, it's not that natural because we have bred it over time to be so uber sweet and filled with starch. So we're not even looking at the same foods.
That's a very true point. So I was trying to make my master theory, and it really has to do with level of processing, and that the more you process it, the food gets less healthy. And I think to use your example of fruit, people think, oh, well, it's unprocessed food. But my definition of process is different, and so is yours. It's right. It's this was been processed for thousands of years. Well, just sort of through natural selection, humans were pretty smart, and then in the last 100 years through GMO and all this like really jacked up
Like
stuff that
selective
they're
breeding and things, right?
selective breeding, and but even to the next level of selective, yeah. And now we have a completely different type of food, and so that is, I think it's processed. Yes, I think this modern fruit is processed. And then to just go further with this, I mean, each level of processing will make something less healthy. You'll probably eat more of it. It's more hyper palatable. It will. You'll add more ingredients like the sugar, flour, oil I mentioned, or even just breaking it down. This is really interesting where there's good studies talking about it. When you break down plant foods, especially carbohydrates, it's not so much for protein or fat. When you can process fat and it won't change its interaction with your body. But when you process down carbohydrates and plant foods, it breaks the cellular walls. Right, people know this for juice, apple juice. You break it down, you extract the juice. Super unhealthy, pure sugar. You don't have the fiber with it to slow the digestion. That type of thing. So that extends to pretty much all carbohydrate foods. When you break them down, just the act of processing them changes their interaction with your gut, and you release different hormones. And there's like GLP-1 and GIP and these different things that happen in your small intestine that send different signals, more insulin. Maybe you're more hungry. When you eat them, the blood sugar roller coaster is different when you eat these foods. So it kind of holds as my theory of everything is that just the level of processing, it's kind of this linear thing that the more it's processed, the worse it is for you. And the solution's pretty easy is you just go up the chain, go uphill and go to the less processed stuff. And you could be, vegetarian, eat a bunch of eggs and dairy and, eat unprocessed foods and you'll probably be fine. Right? It's like you don't need, like I said, you don't need to be like meat-based, although I like animal foods.
I'm a very this is a very pro animal food podcast for sure. But I totally agree with what you're saying. And so I focus on blood sugar regulation for the most part as kind of my specialty. But and so your theory actually also works with blood sugar stuff. So the more processing any food has, this is like one of my general rules that I tell my clients and my listeners that the more processed something is, the faster it will spike your blood glucose. And that's probably how it has to do with the processing and breaking down those molecular walls. And even in smoothies, like if you a lot of people are like, oh, I'm putting vegetables in my smoothie and that's the fiber and it'll slow down the absorption of the fruit sugar and things like that. It's like, well, it's too pulverized. The fiber doesn't have that same integrity. So it's actually not able to do the job of even slowing that absorption when we break it down that much. So, like juices and smoothies and all these things, like we try to make things these like there's so many options nowadays with food and like making things super good. And it's like, oh, look at this smoothie concoction. And it gets like 6,000 likes on Instagram because it's so beautiful and colorful. And it's like, it's not a health promoting food at the end of the day. And it's just disguised in its beauty, but it isn't really super health promoting. So I love that idea of going back to the least process.
It's very true. And what part of my transition was moving away from that. I was caught up in that like spinach and kale shake thing like 5 years ago, and I'm so glad I have cut those out, never looked back. I attribute a lot of my health to not doing that. And also, if you want to learn more about it, there's a very interesting guy named Gabor Erdosi. So I did a podcast with him. My podcast is called Peak Human. So if you look up Gabor, Gabor, just listen to this. He'll talk about all the science behind this stuff and all these studies. It's really interesting.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely go back and listen to that for sure. Yeah, Brian has a great podcast, Peak Human. You interview like really interesting people. So, one of the things I wanted to get back to was this kind of timeline. You're talking about the football field of humanity and what we ate. And so, what kinds of things, what sort of events happened that started to change the landscape of human nutrition and what we ate?
Oh my God. How far back do you want to go? Do you
Well,
want to go back to, yeah.
however far back you feel like going, because we can chat about it.
We could go. Okay, so I'll quickly do the real ancient stuff. The human evolution stuff is, I mean, our landscape. I've interviewed so many interesting people, by the way. Yeah, Mickey Bendor wrote some great paper. He called Man the Fat Hunter. So there was a famous paper called Man the Hunter, where they started talking about, hunting animals, but he realized that we were after fat. And that we could get these giant animals, and we could get there was mammoth and all this megafauna and giant elephants and these gigantic things roaming around the earth. And we could spear them and we could trap them and we could figure out and we would eat them and have energy and fat for days. And those animals disappeared, and it did change our diet. And over the generations, we've gotten just way less big animals, and we've been forced to eat smaller animals. And then that's why a lot of societies, ancient living societies, ended up relying on starches more. But really, we were always after animal foods and fat. And this was this consistent energy source for the body. And we just run better on fat. It just everything kind of aligns. So that's a big food change. But if you want to get into the more modern times too, well, it's always just manipulated. Like as you get into the modern era, like even grains. In the Egyptian times, when we first started eating grains, it's always kind of this like top-down kind of thing where they use grains to feed the people and the masses and slaves to build the pyramids and stuff. It's they just figured out. I feel like there's this consistent theme in throughout the modern times is that they have big industry, big money, big people, and the government are just the ones that make the decisions, like the pharaohs, and they just realize that these are cheap. Shelf stable foods that we can keep people alive on, and there's a lot. It's cheap. The shelf stable part is very important. That they will you can last for years in a silo or something. And this is what the big powers that be push because it's cheap, it's shelf stable, it keeps people alive, and this is what we needed for most of history. And now it supports all the big industry. It's kind of just a sad accident kind of thing where we changed our ideas about fat, right? Fat was always embraced throughout history, even up until the 50s. And all of a sudden we said, oh, saturated fat's bad for you. And we started getting these ideas of the low fat diet as early as the 50s. Dietary guidelines didn't come out till 1980, but they had actually previous versions of those guidelines. Anyway, we changed our idea about fat. It kind of opened the door to the processed food industry. Right. So if you say that fat is bad, then they can make all these low fat products. So then it's like, okay, well, why don't we have to stuff in a bunch of grains and flour and sugar, and you need the sugar so it tastes good. And it's again, it's always this top down system of that food environment's kind of dictated by the rulers. Right. And I mean, it's throughout history, it's kind of always that. And it's always, I think, done in a somewhat, so it's supposed to be beneficial. It's like, hey, we're trying to feed people, And it's not, they're not evil, but it always kind of screws people over in the end.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's kind of like that surviving versus thriving thing that as humans, we're so adaptable. So, like you said, we can survive on grains. But even going back to talking about like where did all these like the idea of breakfast come from and Harvey Kellogg and whatever, can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's
Oh
kind of
yeah.
creepy.
That's a good little story that fits in here. Yeah. The Seventh Day Adventists, the yeah, I was looking back at why we start to even think meat was bad. And this is part of the film. I'm like, okay, so we knew meat was good for all of history. It's all we wanted. When I went to Africa, it's all they talked about. All they could, you know, it's like, how are we gonna get more meat? Let's go on a hunt. How are we gonna afford another cow? Okay, how did we, why do we think meat was bad? It makes sense. And yeah, it started with the Seventh Day Adventists. If you go back late 1800s, this woman, Ellen G. White, she had visions and she was just part of, it was part of this time when women were, didn't have as many rights and they, like men were violent and angry and she blamed it on the meat. It's just funny because you just don't have any science. And these dudes were just chugging beers and, you know, whatever liquor. And, you know, there was like no like equal treatment of women law, anything like that. So there's, she's
Let's
just like,
blame
oh,
the
it must
meat.
be the red meat. Yeah, it's gotta be the meat. And that kind of, yeah, that kind of extended to the Seventh Day Adventists, this idea that, yeah, this Garden of Eden diet, that it's just plant-based is the way to go. And John Harvey Carlog grew up in this environment with these Seventh Day Adventists and got indoctrinated it into the system. And then yeah, he's a famous cereal maker and he had this famous sanitarium actually where he'd have people go out and live on these like terrible diets of he basically thought that red meat caused sexual desires and masturbation and all this stuff. And his idea was you, especially you go to the sanitarium and you just are free of all this and you eat this bland diet. And he also just knew that's a way to make money. It's kind of just the classic processed food story where you take cheap ingredients that are shelf stable, like I keep saying, put them in a box and mark up the price 10x. And yeah, that's cereal for you.
My goodness, that's pretty wild. And so this kind of leads into how, I've heard you on other podcasts talking about how you're pretty open with different dietary philosophies, and I am as well. I'm not like everyone has to do keto. Everyone has to do this because I'm a big believer in bioindividuality, and I'm also a big believer in variability in diets. I think that our diets need to change over time. We need to stay open to it. Like I've personally found a ton of healing on paleo. It healed my allergies, my asthma, my sinus infections, but then I got insulin resistance and PCOS, so I had to shift and I did keto and fasting, and now I kind of am doing a little bit more back to the paleo, and like it's shifting. But it's all real food based. So I believe that you're kind of similar in your thinking in terms of like being open to different dietary philosophies, not like one is this is it, everyone has to eat like this. There's not one answer in nutrition. But I do believe that we agree on the fact that we're both pretty actively anti-veganism for health reasons and as well as environmental reasons.
Yes, absolutely. That's a good kind of recap of my thoughts. There's many ways to go about it. I embrace all diets except the vegan diet. It just doesn't make sense to me. There's been no vegan population throughout history. There's no way they could have done it until they invented B12 supplements, you know, whatever year that was. That was in the 2000s. I mean, not the 2000s, in the 1900s, maybe 30s. I don't know. So it wasn't even possible. And there, yeah. I mean, we have, again, I went to Africa to try to see it. And all they are after is animal foods. And they are very confused at why anyone would choose to not eat foods. There's like, this is the pillar of health. Like, this is like, we have nothing. We have to survive on just tubers and leaves, but we get to get milk, you know, 2 times a week. And it's the only nutrition we get, you know? And so it's very odd that people think it's healthy in our modern world where we've run out of problems, or I guess they've just mixed in environmental and ethical ideas into the health conversation. So I guess we just need to separate that conversation, for one thing, right? You can't. It's kind of this propaganda where they'll throw it in to try to make people think that it's the right way to go. But I was like, completely separate these conversations, then we can talk about it. And when you really look at the vegan diet, it's not, it's very simple to look at the nutrition science. Like, we have enough science on vitamins and minerals and protein, and we just know that it doesn't work. It doesn't have the fat soluble vitamins. Like, this is not open for debate. I mean, maybe you could try to supplement enough of the fat soluble vitamins and get these sources, but the plant sources of the fat soluble vitamins aren't as, your body can't use them, right? The conversion is a lot lower, and some people can convert them more than others, and maybe those are the people who manage to do okay on it long term. But from what I've seen, most people do it sh they do it short term. They find benefits because they stopped eating trash, and then they eventually get nutrient deficiencies and have all these other problems. So
And then they try to vegan harder and say that they didn't do it the right way and keep trying and trying, beating a dead horse when really it's they need to shift. And so there's a quote that I have saved to post on Instagram, but it's like, don't thank veganism for what removing processed foods did, because I think that's where a lot of people, they kind of feel like, oh my goodness, this vegan diet worked for me because I removed processed foods. I feel so much better, but it's really from what they're not having as opposed to what they are having.
Yeah, or they remove meat. You mean, yeah, they remove meat and they think they did so much better, but you're like, no, you remove processed foods is why you're doing so much better. Yeah, it's and the other side of it too. I went on this journey, and I think I was a little more into like keto, paleo is the only way to go before, but I just wanted to talk about my journey and learning and why I kind of came to this conclusion that there's more to it. Is yeah, for one, always being open, always looking at both sides, always, because I was always curious, like, well, why do some diets work? Before I learned about Africa and the fact, I didn't really know that how much they had to subsist on these tubers and starchy foods. But then I heard about the Okinawans, before that. There's just like these famous examples of populations that had very high carb diets. But then when you start to look at it more, it all makes sense. It's because they're eating all whole foods for one, and they're not kind of mixing this killer combo of all the high carbs and high fat at the same time. So you have the groups that are going high fat and low carb and doing amazing, and then you have groups like I mentioned, Okinawans and Africa. They're just not eating enough. They just don't have enough access to fat, and they don't have access to processed foods. So they're just it's fine. It's not the end of the world. I don't think it's optimal, and I don't think a lot of people in modern society can do it because the options we have are way different than the options they have, right? They we if someone tried to go on a low fat, starchy diet in America, you'd end up just eating the standard American diet that's failed. And why is everyone so fat and sick? But their version is 100% whole foods straight from the garden and their neighbors. And so it's completely different. So yeah, like I said, I've interviewed 150 people, more than that. I just love to look at all sides of things and try to stay unbiased and just look at the commonalities and what works and what doesn't. And it's very clear when you do that and you don't get into a camp.
That's great. I love that. And it's such a good view of trying to stay unbiased because, after all, we're kind of everybody, we agree that everybody's going to need something that looks a little bit different and that everybody's needs are changing over time. So if you don't stay open, you're boxing yourself in, you're closing out ideas that might possibly help. So I love that sort of, Switzerland stance that you have. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I love that what you're saying about even the time period in someone's life, you should change it or based on their needs. And I'm very into that, where most people show up very insulin resistant and overweight and sick. And yeah, I don't think we need to add a bunch of whole food carbs, even if they're fine for most people. They're not fine for this person. Let's go. Like, there's a progression we can make. We can get them healthy, and then we could start adding some other foods back in once they're healthy. And yeah, I like your progression. It's like paleo, then it's kind of the opposite. I see people going from paleo to keto to like more animal food base, and it's almost like you can do the opposite to get someone out of the mess, right? I work with a doctor at Sapien. My main thing's called Sapien, and let's start with animal base, with like very low carb. Let's get you back, right? Let's get these satiating meals where you're not hungry. Let's do some fasting, and not right away, but then, then we can move into the paleo, would be the end goal. Then we can eat more foods and base it on your situation at the time.
Yeah, I love that. That's kind of, I just take people, it's like you got to get off the processed foods. So for them, paleo is sometimes a natural first step, and then you slowly lower the carbs to get your keto. Some people need to go all the way to carnivore, but I don't feel like the goal is to stay there. I feel like the goal should be to have as much variety as you can and to kind of use carbs as a tool to, for whatever need you have, especially for women. I feel like we do better, like in modern day, with a little bit of carbs. And it's that we can't be like demonizing carbohydrates overall, but it's more like the context in which we have carbs. And then, like you talked about, not mixing high carb with high fat, which is what I think that I was doing when I was doing paleo, because I took my sweet tooth from the standard American diet and turned it into like smoothies, acai bowls, plantain chips, kombucha, sweet potatoes at every meal, planted, like I had all the high carb stuff. Plus, I was like, well, fat is good for me and fat doesn't make me fat. So I had that with my carbs and it was a recipe for disaster. So,
100%. Yeah, I see that all the time. And yeah, and oh yeah, also I think, sorry, the targeted, the carb stuff is good, yes, for women and for athletes, for anyone. I mean, it's totally fine. It just target them, and I think it's a lot about the frequency of eating them too. Like, I don't think anyone needs them more than once a day. This is my newer idea, is that just once a day. I mean, no matter what, like, I don't think anyone on earth really needs them more than once a day. And that I think that anyone could benefit from only having the carbs once a day.
I love that. I really do. And I think I've also started to kind of think about, like, you're sitting at a desk, you have this modern sort of lifestyle. You get up, you get ready for work, you go sit at a desk, and then you go home. You don't need carbohydrate. Like if you think about carbohydrate as fast fuel, you're not doing anything in your day that's fast. Go have carbs for lunch and go do a bunch of sprints in the parking lot and then come back and sit at your desk. You've kind of like, I don't want to say like earned the carbs, but like that's your body might need them if you're like, you need to have a reason to have them kind of. I don't know
That's
if that makes sense.
a 100%. You're not the Hadza that are going off on these like 8-hour hunts, and yeah, that are using them. And I love that. It's like, yeah, if you work out, it's like that targeted carb approach that takes the ultimate goal. You get that metabolic flexibility where you can run on fat, train your body to run on fat, and then eventually become metabolically flexible so you can have carbs too. And then that's the holy grail. You got it all. But then again, eat them once a day if you need at most, and eat them after you work out. Like like I do my workout at night, and then maybe I'll have some carbs after dinner, for
That's
dinner,
perfect.
and I'm good.
Yeah,
Because then
that's so good.
you burn it off, right? You're just like re either replacing your glycogen stores if you eat it after, or you maybe eat it before and then you burn it off, you use up that sugar, and then let's just run on fat for the rest of the
Yeah, and I feel so grateful that I'm so glad you're saying what you're saying, because this is like almost verbatim what I've kind of told my audience, and it's nice to hear it coming from someone else. But like I've developed this metabolic flexibility, and I can literally eat ice cream at night and wake up and be in ketosis. That's how like my body does have that metabolic flexibility, so I can go for periods without it, and then I can add them back in when I want. I feel like I have like I'm having my cake and eating it too kind of thing. Like it's like the best of all worlds.
It's seriously, I call the Holy Grail. It's serious. It's amazing. And yeah, I never messed with ketone measurement and all that stuff, but in Africa, we were eating what they ate, right? We had these starchy foods. I had like tons of this and that, and we had bananas and this and that. And yeah, I woke up and the blood sugar was like 71 because we were testing the Hadza's blood sugar. It's like my
Oh,
blood
that's
sugar is
so great.
71. Like I had ketones, like it wasn't super high ketones, but I'm like, I just ate a high carb meal and woke up with ketones. So
That's great. Yeah. So that's exactly what happened. So tell us more about Africa. I'm like excited to hear more about your journey. Like tell us maybe why you went, who you were looking at, and some things you found really fascinating.
Yeah, big takeaways. Everything was kind of confirmed that I thought, but then I did have some even more takeaways. But I
Cool.
went for the Food Lies film. This is kind of our basically last thing we need to shoot for it. And yeah, we went to this amazing woman, Mary Ruddick, who is just like a nutrition genius. She helped us plan, and we visited the Hadza, the Maasai, and the Batwa, which are the Pygmies. Those are the main three groups we visited. And very interesting, very different groups. Very different groups. The Maasai are the ones that are famous for just
Drinking
tending to
blood.
their cows, and they eat blood,
Yeah.
meat and milk. And we drank the blood and the milk with them. It was so cool and
How
pretty
was
tasty.
it?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Yeah, I mean, it was very mild tasting. It was just
Okay.
kind of like flavored milk, like a light flavor. It wasn't like very, some people think it's like very irony. I don't
Yeah.
know. It wasn't that irony. It was just kind of pleasant. So
Oh,
we
good.
did that. Yeah, the Maasai, very healthy people, very tall. They lived long. We talked with an elderly gentleman, said his grandpa lived to 110. That they, and it's really cool. They don't really know much about nutrition science. They just like, I don't know, we just eat food and stuff, right? But they're very tuned into it. Like this older guy was very tuned into not trusting modern foods. He was talking about, it's like they last too long. Like it was very, very astute. He's kind of like, I don't trust that. It sits on the shelf forever. We don't want foods from the stores. We don't think these vegetable oils are good because these oils are coming in. And so at least the older generation, he was like, we don't think these are good. And we see the younger generations not living as long. They're getting more sickness. They're all this stuff. Like he sees it. And this was consistent with everyone we talked to. It was this general sentiment of modern foods coming in aren't good. Our people used to live longer, and animal foods are our favorite foods. We would always ask them, "What's your favorite food?" or "What is the healthiest thing you could eat?" And it would always be like their version. It's like either milk or meat or goats or whatever it was. It was liver.
And they ate all
Yeah,
the
we so you
organs.
give. The organs, yeah. So the Hadza are very different from the Maasai. So, those are the guys that we went on the 8-hour hunt with. They went longer than us. We couldn't quite make it. It was a journey. It was a struggle, but well, we had camera equipment and stuff. And anyway, they got well. They had ate some weird meats. They got a baboon. They just get whatever they can get. Like I said before, that there's a lack of these big animals. They used to get, well, I mean, way back in the day, they used to get giant elephants. Now, then they were able to get kudu, which is like a big deer, antelope. They get all these different kinds of antelope and deer. They were pretty big and they could feed themselves, but now they're kind of pushed off their land and they can only get little baboons and bush babies and tik-taks, which are like little deer, like just a couple, like a foot and a half tall. And yeah, they got one and opened it up for us, and we ate the liver raw. There's guts all over the place. There was intestines. There was just like all kinds of stuff, greens and browns, like all over it, and all over the knife, all over his hands. And he just gave it to me, and it was just covered in. And I just ate it. I was like, "All right, eat the raw liver." And I don't know. It tasted fine. It was great. I felt great the whole trip. No one got sick. No one had the slightest problem. I think we had an amazing microbiome introduced into our, well, microbiome diversity introduced into our gut. It was amazing. Like we felt great. We were eating all the weird things. And another kind of myth-busting thing that happened was the Hadza are famous for. In the papers I've read, they're like, oh, they eat like 60 kinds of plants. They're just like, all they do is eat fiber and plants, and they hunt. Well, they hunt every day, but fiber plants, right? It's just this weird thing because all I saw them do was hunt and care about meat, and I didn't see them eating any fibers or plants. But the another group we visited, the of the Hadza, did eat. They were just sitting around. The women were eating these tubers, but they rip off all the outside of the fiber, right? And then there was just this core, and then they chew on the core and then just spit out all the fiber. So it didn't seem like, and then I ate a piece. They gave me a piece and I ate it. It's impossible to chew through, and you just spit it out. I'm like, I did not ingest any fiber. I mean, I got some starch, you know, like I got some glucose basically, but I
Yeah.
didn't get any fiber. So I think this kind of fiber myth is a little interesting because
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they were, it's not like they have this cornucopia of 60 types of plants either. The women had like one type of plant. They're like, we have this leaf, we have this like pumpkin leaf,
And that's it.
right? So it's like, so we were there for 3 days with different groups and seeing all the things we could see. We saw one type, a tuber. We saw all kinds of meat and organs and fat, and we saw one type of leaf. So that was our limited experience, but
Wow.
I don't know. I don't think we need to, this whole like eat the rainbow thing is a modern thing we've made up because we have a lot of misconceptions about what is healthy and we have access to all this and the grocery store is a rainbow and you're like, oh
Right.
wow, I'm so healthy. I'm eating everything in
Right.
sight. Like, yeah,
But
it's maybe.
yeah, so I also think that based on like trying to connect some of the things you said is that maybe this is that eat the rainbow is our other way of kind of diversifying our gut bacteria a little bit because we don't have access to like all the microbes and things. So maybe that it's sort of like taking place of
It
it.
could
I'm
be.
just, yeah,
I'm not
because,
saying it's bad. I'm
yeah.
not saying it's bad to eat the rainbow. I think it's unnecessary. I like to always just do the myth busting, and
Yeah.
I never, except for vegan diets, I try not to say anything's bad or hate on anything. I just want to always say that that's not necessary. That's my big point, right? It's like I'm not a carnivore person that says fiber's terrible. I'm just saying it's not necessary. You know what I mean? Same thing with eating the rainbow. And you're right about the microbiome is, yes, they're getting the microbiome from this tuber was sitting on the ground. Like these people were sitting in the dirt, their food was in the dirt,
They're
and
drinking
they're
probably
eating it.
water from a puddle, right? I saw someone doing that on
Well,
someone's story.
yeah, you're getting water from a puddle, you're getting water from like a crook in a tree, you know, it like catches in the tree, and then it was pure brown. Just the brownest water. This kid like climbed to the tree, got a baobab like fruit as a cup, and they put it in one of our water bottles. It was pure brown. And yeah, that's their microbiome. They're eating guts and organs and all that kinds of weird stuff and eating off the ground. So
Yeah. I recently did a gut test and my levels of there's like let's say eight bacteria that it looks at. My levels of my bacteria are like 0.02%, 0.9%. I'm like I've, tons of antibiotics in my lifetime, but I have like no good gut bacteria and I'm just like shocked. And so I'm kind of going down this rabbit hole of like, okay, how can I do this? But the answer isn't like take a bunch of store-bought probiotics. It doesn't work that way. So it's interesting to think about like maybe growing a little bit more of my own food and, not washing it off and having these soil-based organisms and all those kind of things, like trying to go even further back to nature because I think that we have as humans, like it's 2021, we're, communicating through a computer. Like we always look to technology to kind of answer our problems. But with nutrition, I feel like it's always look backwards. And I think that that is a better sort of approach. So I don't know, trying to think about how
No, I
to.
love that. I love that. I would say, yeah, if you can't grow your own food, maybe go to a farmer's market and get some good organic food that was grown nearby and don't wash it. Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I don't like to wash my hands. I'm not like a big hand wash. Everyone with COVID's like, we got
Me
to wash our hands
too.
every 10 seconds. I'm like, no, dude.
I started washing my hands a lot at the beginning of the pandemic because I worked in an office and I started to break out with this like weird eczema thing on my skin. I'm like, this is, this only happens if I wash my hands too much. And I started working from home because I was able to quit my speech therapy job and do this full time. And I hardly wash my hands. I only like if I'm, washing my hands from I'm touching food and whatever, I need to rinse them off. But like using soap, it destroys the natural, like, sort of balance that's
There's a
on your
holobiome.
skin. Yeah,
Yeah, the
exactly.
holobiome, whatever it's called, yeah, however you pronounce it. But yes, you have a microbiome on your skin on the outside of your body, and you need to keep it intact.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So no hand sanitizers, anything. Like we went
Oh
camping
no.
the other day, my wife and I for our anniversary, and I was just kind of like, all right, is this clean enough? I'm like, it's camping clean, but I think like camping clean is like good enough because we're
Human.
so sterile. Everything is just like antibacterial soap. And then you go out into nature and it's like, just like these tribes that you're seeing, they're sitting in the dirt, they're touching dirt, their hands are filled with dirt. Of course, it's not laden with, hopefully not laden with like pesticides and things, but like it's n natural, and it's natural to ingest that. And like, we buy soil-based probiotics in a bottle to try to mimic some of that, but
Mimic
it's
that.
pretty wild.
It absolutely, they're eating more than dirt. Like I was talking about with the organs, they're eating guts. They're eating like the stomach contents and that even stuff in the colon. They're like, this is like fecal matter that we were eating. I had a soup that was like diarrhea. Like it was poop soup, we called it. Like it was every organ on a goat, including the contents of the intestines and colon in a soup. And then they got this one herb. It was like this spicy root, and they put it in, they boiled it for hours. And this is their health soup. They kept talking about, oh, this is the thing. This is like our medicine. This is our, you have to drink the soup. And it was brown. And I saw the rectum floating around in the soup at one point, and it was gross. But I drank it and I felt fine. And I think that we are very scared of anything. Like I'm not good. I'm not as scared of even with the food stuff. Before I was talking about, yeah, I touched the food, I got to wash my. Now I'm even less worried about that. You know, I'm kind of like, I can leave a steak sitting around for a while. You know, I don't know. These people left stuff out. It's like your body can handle this stuff.
Yeah, I firmly believe that as well. I like to also make sure I have enough stomach acid to like, and a lot of people who are like prone to getting, you know, foodborne illnesses and things like that. It's like, well, what's your level of stomach acid? Because we have hydrochloric acid in our stomach that can like literally eat through our body tissues, and it's there to disinfect. It's there to sort of kill off these pathogens. And then we have pepsin that's digesting these microproteins, which are also like microorganisms or proteins. So we have enough stomach acid, we have the pepsin, and that should, I think, keep us safe from doing this. And your experiences confirming it. So I love, I can't believe you had poop soup. I would do it too, because like I do anything in the name of health. I'm like, all right, I'll have, you know, liver raw. I'm just gonna swallow it. I'll eat like fish roe and, you know, just close my nose and swallow it. And I'll eat anything if it's good for me. So I would do it, but oh my gosh, that would be a little hard. That would be really hard.
It was hard. I'm not saying I was super excited about it, but Mary, you know, she was there. She's like, we drank it. And, you know, I'm like, all right. And I was like, are you sure you drank it? Are you messing with me? Like, no, we drank it. I was like, all right, here we go.
I bet it's so good for like for your gut bacteria, like you're saying. I
I
just,
think so. I think it keeps them healthy because we actually ate the liver. This is with the Maasai, and they killed a goat for us, and we drank the blood raw straight out of like within like a second.
Oh my gosh.
But they cut up the organs too. But the liver had worms in it, and I didn't see them, and I ate it with the worms. And Mary saw the worms and ate it anyway. And she thinks that because they drink this soup, or you know, there's these natural antimicrobials and antiparasitics in maybe the roots, or maybe just something about it was keeping them from having problems with the worms.
Wow, that's so
But I also
crazy.
took wormwood. She told us to bring wormwood, which is antiparasitic. So we took wormwood to once she told me that we ate the worms in the liver. And I mean, yes, I have no problems.
Oh,
I guess
good.
it works.
That's great.
Either the
That's good.
soup or the wormwood works.
Okay.
Or
That's
both.
good. Awesome. So that is, I mean, we could probably talk for hours on your experience there, but I wanted to, we're rounding off an hour here. So I wanted to kind of ask you, I'm really excited for your documentary to come out, Food Lies. Do you know when it's going to come out yet?
No, we're trying at the end of this because we just got this last bit of footage. We need to film with actually a few more people on the East Coast, and then yeah, we're just wrapping it up. So maybe
Nice.
by the end of summer for backers, we have it still on Indiegogo.
Awesome. Yeah. So I was going to ask how people can help support the film, so we can link to that in the show notes. So it's on
Yeah.
Indiegogo and
Or
through your.
foodlies.org.
Okay, perfect.
Foodlies.org is where you can find the film, or sapien.org is where you can find everything. It's kind of the umbrella company, umbrella site.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Well, we'll link to everything in the show notes so people can find you. And thanks so much for having this conversation. I feel like There's so much more that we could talk about, so maybe we'll have to get you on here again when the film comes out. So thanks for chatting, Brian.
That'd be great. Yeah, thanks so much. Good times.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. All right, everyone. That was the interview with Brian Sanders. Thank you, Brian, for coming onto the show. And make sure you all go out and help his film. So go to the Indiegogo link that I put in the show notes and follow him on Instagram at Food Lies. I share a lot of his content because I love a lot of his memes. They're kind of like snarky and but it's like pointing at the obvious. So it's really good. Thanks again for listening. And I have another wonderful interview coming next week all about how to get into the parasympathetic state and stress reduction and all those goodies that we need so badly to help our blood sugar stay under control, help us heal, help us detox, and so much more. So stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe, like, leave a rating and review. That's how other people find the show. Thank you all for listening. Love you all. Bye. Thank you.